So our words from Jesus today are suitable for putting on our refrigerator. They are basically our job description. Jesus tells us that following him does not stop with believing some things about him, but that it starts there. And if we do believe that Jesus is the Son of God who redeems us, who buys us back from sin and death, futility and ourselves, then we need to be serious about following him. Words alone are a good start, but if we don't live any differently, what difference does it make? Jesus said, anybody can love those who love you. That's no trick. But Jesus said, I tell you, do the harder thing. Love your enemies, because it's not just about you. One of the things Jesus gets at today is what we Lutherans like to distinguish as law and gospel. Laws, like the eye for an eye one that Jesus referenced, are sometimes understood as a command to seek retribution. But that's not it at all. The intention of that law, eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth, was to set limits so that if anybody caused you to lose an eye or a tooth, you could not have them executed. And then Jesus takes it a step higher, saying, if somebody harms you, forgive them. Pray for them. This is why we Lutherans don't put the whole Bible on the same plane for authority. But rather, as gospel people, we maintain that the words of Jesus have priority. And if what Jesus says is different than what the Old Testament says, what Jesus says wins. The law does not save. All it can do is convict. And living by laws and rules leads us to believe that being faithful is just about being religious and mostly towing the line. Jesus calls us to take the harder path. He calls us to be intentional and serious about living our faith by choosing to live differently than the ways of the world around us, the world where people say things like, do unto others before they do unto you. And Jesus doesn't leave this as just a vague love your neighbor's commandment. Today he tells us how. Live differently than the way of the world around you. Now, there's part of us that might say, yeah, that's nice, Jesus, but that's not how it is here in the real world. If we lived that way, we would quickly become the world's doormats and everybody would wipe their feet on us. How naive do you think we are? So to be clear, Jesus does not want us to be passive in this. He doesn't want us to just roll over and become victims. Instead, Jesus leads us to intentionally choose to stand up to evil, selfishness, hate, and greed. Not with force, not to arm ourselves, but to stand up to it with love. Much in the same way Jesus went to the cross. Now, living this way is no accident. It goes against our grain. It needs to be an intentional choice to live for love. About 70 years ago, there was a man in India we came to know as Gandhi. He changed the world. He was born a Hindu, and he led a nonviolent revolt against the British who occupied India. The British had colonized India. They were Christians, and they thought themselves superior to the Indians. They were in India primarily to make money, often at the expense of the Indians. And the result was that the Indians, after the British arrived, had fewer rights and more poverty after these Christian British arrived. At one point, Gandhi said, I've read about your Jesus. Very interesting man. And you know, I would love to be a Christian if I ever met one. How's that for an indictment? But instead, Gandhi, a non-Christian, lived out the words we have from Jesus today. And he changed the world. But just 10 years later in our country, there was a little girl named Ruby Bridges. You may have seen the Norman Rockwell painting of her. She's 7 years old. She's walking up to a public school with federal marshals around her. And the marshals are afraid. But they're not afraid of Ruby. They're afraid of the crowd outside the school, screaming at Ruby. And the crowd is apparently afraid of this little 7-year-old girl. Ruby was one of the first black children to enter into an all-white school in New Orleans. She had an escort to protect her from the angry mob of parents who shouted every obscenity in the book at her. She learned to read and write all by herself because none of the white parents wanted their kids being, I don't know, infected by Ruby. So one day, as she left school, she's facing this angry mob, and her teacher thinks that she saw Ruby say something to them. So she asked her, "Ruby, what did you say to them?" And Ruby said, "Well, I didn't say anything." And the teacher said, but I saw your lips move." Ruby said, "I wasn't talking to them. I was praying for them." And her teacher said, "You were praying for them?" And Ruby said, "Well, don't you think they need our prayers, Miss Henry?" And her teacher said, "Well, what did you pray?" She said, "I prayed the words that Jesus said when his enemies were coming after him, 'Father, forgive them, for they don't know what they're doing.'" Now, no one could have required little Ruby to pray for the vicious mob that wanted her gone, some of them dead. But she knew Jesus as the one who loved her and gave her the power to love people who hated her. Now, we Northerners think this happened in the Jim Crow South 50 years ago. Well, it did. But 11 years ago here in Sussex, oh, the bugs are alive. 11 years ago in Sussex, right after Katrina, there was a young woman, Shanika, came to live in our town seeking refuge here. She had 3 little girls. And one day on the way to school, one of her girls was sitting in the bus, and a boy sitting next to her said, "I don't want any dirty little, I can't tell you what, sitting next to me." And he kicked her off the seat under the floor of the bus. He learned that somewhere. And afterwards, she said, "When he called me names, it didn't bother me because I'm supposed to forgive him. But when he kicked me under the floor, it really hurt." These 2 little girls, who were the subject of undeserved hate, knew a love that let them live in a different way than the rest of the world. Do we? Which kind of world do we want to live in? A world that is ruled by hate and violence, or a place where little girls can pray for people who hate them because of what they are? Jesus said, "Any old sinner can love people who love them. That's no trick. But I tell you, love your enemies. Pray for those who persecute you. Turn the other cheek. If you have 2 coats, give 1 to those who has none." Now, we've heard it said, all that evil needs to triumph is for people of good will to do nothing. In the face of evil, we can't do nothing. In the season of Epiphany, we focus on how God is revealed to us in Christ, and we Christians focus on how we get to reveal Jesus to the world. Jesus invites us to join him in redeeming the world by bringing in healing and hope and love in ways that are not just words alone, but things that we can see and taste and feel. And we have lots of opportunities for this. Clothes and medicine and shelter and forgiveness, acceptance, seeking justice, standing up for the victim, welcoming the outcast, breaking down the loneliness of those who languish alone, praying for those who hate you and would do you harm. Don't seek to get even or to respond to hate with hate or violence with violence. Jesus teaches us to respond to the different forms of evil with love. Because no matter what the world thinks, that is real power. Following Jesus is not simply a code of moral behavior. Jesus expects more than us than selling out to the petty, short-sighted ways of the world, choosing to live differently. St. Paul described it as being in the world, but not of it. We live in this world, but we are not defined by it. It is a path of sacrificing ourselves for others because Jesus has sacrificed himself for us. And when that lives in our hearts, when Jesus' sacrifice for us lives in our hearts, we can pray for our enemies. We can turn the other cheek. We can be generous and compassionate. We can live as Jesus' partners in redeeming this world. So yeah, Jesus' words for us today, they're good words to cut out and put on your fridge. It's a nice reminder of who Jesus called us to be, who Jesus makes us to be.